The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning. Just approaching 5 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, the 18th of October, 2023. You're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 till noon show. How are you all keeping? Hopefully you're all doing well this morning. What are the roads like? I'm going to have to ask. I know people are waiting to hear what people are saying about one of the biggest changes, I suppose, to traffic. Not wishing to overstate it, across the county in quite some time. That is the switching on of the Polestar lights. The lights on the Polestar roundabout. Again, I'm fully conscious that if you're in North Inishowen, West Donegal, in Donegal Town, it's not going to interest you, but thousands upon thousands upon thousands of you will have already gone through those lights, going to those places, it has to be said. And it's early days. There's a bedding in process. There's a calibration process. But I know from reaction I got to a post on social media that a lot of people have things to say. So if you have something to say, not just criticism, if there's anything constructive to say as well, has your life improved as a result? As I say, it's morning one. So we have to give everything a chance to bed in, don't we? But what I will say, my observation was, or is, for me coming to work this morning, it didn't really make much difference. But I did notice extra traffic. It's all, like it helped me-ish. But I did notice extra traffic on other approaches that I don't normally see there. But anyway, what are your views? If you want to talk about it, that and so much more besides coming up, how do you get involved? 086 60 25,000, your WhatsApps and texts to that number. 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 07491 25,000, comments at highlandradio.com. And there's a ton of content on the show for you today, as always. So no excuse to go anywhere between now and noon, or for the rest of the day, for that matter, here on Highland Radio. Let's have a look at the newspapers this morning. The Finn Valley Voice: there's a massive gender pay gap in Donegal. It's official. Donegal women, many of whom are the breadwinners of the family, are paid less than women anywhere else in Ireland. They're also paid less than their menfolk, a lot less. Figures from the CSO indicate that the average Donegal woman takes home less than €500 per week, just under €200 less than her counterparts in Dublin. It's also some €100 less than the menfolk here in County Donegal. What do you think about that? On to the Inish Times this morning. Minister to visit hospital after consultants hit out. I'll wait with interest to see when this visit actually takes place. But we read on here from Declan McGee. The HSE has said it's aware of the challenges facing Letterkenny University Hospital after hospital consultants warned of a collapse in services unless action is taken. In a letter to Minister for Health Stephen Donnelly, 11 consultants called for an external review of services due to a crisis that is rapidly approaching a tipping point. The letter echoes concerns expressed by 78 GPs in Donegal, who also wrote to the minister outlining grave concerns for patients at the emergency department. The minister is now expected to visit the hospital as soon as possible. Donegal TD and Agriculture Minister Charlie McConlogue said he has had discussions with the health minister, adding that Mr Donnelly has pledged to meet with the GPs and consultants. And it would be really great if government reps such as Minister Stephen Donnelly would speak to the public as well through mediums like this, which is the People's Show. I would hope it's seen as that way. And I think it's a good opportunity for people to speak directly to those that listen. We have an ongoing, almost daily request for Stephen Donnelly to come on the show and just explain what the situation is, what he hopes to do, what he hopes to achieve. And he's a very busy man, of course, and we'll see when he is able to accept that offer. The Irish Times: hundreds killed after strike on hospital in Gaza City. This is just the most horrendous of stories, the catastrophic loss of life again. And I'm getting to the point whereby certainly Twitter stroke X, I'm thinking of coming off it, because I was just scrolling through Twitter and was met by the most horrendous of videos. Now, as I said before, you know, people might say, "Ah, but you need to see that to understand what's going on." I understand what's going on. I know what's going on. But there are things I happened to see as I was just scrolling through a social media platform that I never, ever want to see. And I haven't been right since. And I can't even describe it to you because it is so shocking. But that is nothing my feelings is nothing compared to the actual reality of the situation and what people are facing over there. Hamas and Israel blamed each other for an explosion at a Gaza City hospital last night that health authorities said killed at least 500 people. Eyewitnesses described horrific scenes as terrified residents fled to the hospital with a huge fire burning in the compound. Hundreds of people were feared trapped under the rubble. The Gaza authorities immediately said Israel was responsible for the attack, but in a statement, the Israeli army said intelligence analysis had determined conclusively that the blast had been caused by an Islamic Jihad projectile aimed at Israel that fell short, hitting the Al-Hali Baptist Hospital. Islamic Jihad denied the Israeli claims, and it's a bit of confusion because there was a video that accompanied that statement from the Israeli authorities, but when the timelines didn't add up, they deleted the video from the tweet. Thousands of Gaza residents had reportedly fled to the hospital over the last few days, believing they would be relatively safe there from incessant Israeli airstrikes launched in the wake of the attack on Israel by Hamas on October 7th that killed 1,400 people in Israel, most of them civilians, the worst terrorist attack in Israeli history. Health authorities in Gaza say that prior to the hospital strike, at least 3,000 people in the Strip had been killed in the Israeli bombardment, while some 600,000 people have fled to the south of the coastal enclave after Israeli military warnings. On to the Irish Independent, Mark McSharry, who is a South Donegal rep, mostly Sligo Leitrim, of course. South Donegal added on to that constituency. He is a former Fianna Fáil, of course, then became a bit of a maverick. He's a regular guest on this show from time to time, which is an oxymoron, but he comes on from time to time. Well, the former Fianna Fáil TD, Mark McSharry, has revealed he will not contest the next general election. The long-serving Sligo politician's decision will bring to an end a more than two decades in national politics. In a statement, Mr. McSharry said it had been an extraordinary privilege to serve the Oireachtas since 2002. I'm eternally grateful to all the opportunity for all the opportunity to serve as a TD and senator over more than 21 years. I'd like to thank everyone for the support and assistance, he said. I'm sure we'll get a chat with him before his tenure is complete. On to the Irish Daily Mail now, and the man accused of stabbing teacher Aisling Murphy to death told Gardaí, "I did it, I am the murderer," his trial is heard. On the opening day of the court case, the Central Criminal Court heard that Yosef Puska, 33, admitted the crime to Gardaí on January 14th, 2022, 2 days after Ms. Murphy was killed while jogging in Tullamore, County Offaly. The jury also heard details of her death, including that she had been stabbed multiple times. At one point, Ms. Murphy's mother, Kathleen, broke down in tears while her father, Raymond, clasped her, his head in his hands. Her sister, Amy, and brother, Cahill, were also present in court yesterday. Incredibly, incredibly difficult for that family to be going through that, having already endured and continuing to endure that loss. On to the Irish Daily Mirror now, and it doesn't send a really great road safety message out this. A driver, a Lamborghini driver no less, caught speeding at 217 kilometres per hour, 217 kilometres per hour, and who overtook a dozen cars during a 10 kilometre pursuit by Gardaí, avoided jail yesterday. At Castlebar District Court, Jason Wall admitted dangerous driving and was handed a 2-year ban. The court heard how he took full responsibility for his actions on a stretch of the N17 in County Mayo on September 16th. Ahead of the hearing, Wall said the Lamborghini sold it and also took a driving course. But Judge Fiona Lydon branded his actions unacceptable, and he said he had no regard for the safety of others. So it's really quite interesting. In this country, you can drive at 270 kilometres per hour. You can overtake dozens of cars. You can be pursued by Gardaí for 10 kilometres and get a 2-year driving ban. That's really quite impressive, isn't it? It's almost like a green light for such behaviour. No jail time and effectively what comes across as a slap on the wrist. Were you travelling through Monaghan at all? It's possible. I know lots of people who like to buy lotto tickets when they're outside the area. Maybe one of you did. A lotto player has just a month left to claim a prize worth €1 million and €500 however you would describe that. It's €1 million plus 500. Punters in Monaghan are being urged to check their old tickets from Saturday, August 19th. Saturday, August 19th. The massive amount was won in the Lotto Plus raffle, which usually sees between 60 and 120 winners of €500. But in a one-off event, each of the tickets with the winning Lotto Plus raffle number was put into a draw where one ticket was selected to win an additional 1 million. The winning raffle number was 3249. The quick pick ticket was bought at Centra on on Main Street in Emmyvale, County Monaghan, on August the 17th. So was that you? Could have been you. You may have been travelling. I want a cut, by the way. If you find that ticket now and it was you, 10%. I think 10%'s fair. And lastly, are you a glider, a clumper, or a crust avoider, is the question. This is to do with buttering your bread. A psychologist has revealed what your spreading on toast technique says about your personality. Human behavioural expert Darren Staunton reveals that gliders who glide the knife over the bread for an even spread, which is me, something 50% of the 2,000 adults polled claim to do, tend to be easygoing and calm in nature, which is literally not me. They are, well, it's all a load of nonsense because I'm a glider and I'm not calm. They are unfazed by hurdles or moments of stress. Literally not me. But anyway, that's that. So if you're a glider, apparently you're really chilled and cool. Clumpers are those who don't spread evenly and leave clumps on the bread. They are sporadic, thinking outside the box in life. And on it goes. I notice young ones find it difficult to butter toast, at least the ones I've come in contact with. Maybe it's a learned process, or maybe they're just not as relaxed and calm as I am, clearly. All right, good morning to you, Anita. You're listening in from the Cayman Islands. Have a great day yourself. What's the weather like over there, Anita? Tracy's with us as well. She's in Ardra. How are you doing, Tracy? Great to have you on board from a most beautiful part of the world. And Michael's there as well with us. They're all watching the show live. We have loads of guests for you to see over the next 2¾ hours. You can go onto YouTube and watch on your smart TV or your Fire Stick. Just type in Highland Radio Ireland. Give us a like and subscribe as well, if you don't mind. And you can cross us, watch us across all of your devices, your laptop, tablet, phone, you know yourself, on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, on Facebook, which is Highland Hope or Highland Radio News and Sport. And get involved with us that way and say good morning and tell us where you're watching from. All right, we'll be back, as Lee actually mentioned earlier on. We've got a great young band in playing some live music for us. That's coming up about 10:30, so you can watch that and so much more besides. A caller says these delays as a result of the new lights will have huge consequences for bus and lorry drivers whose driving hours are regulated by tachograph regulations. The inevitable result will be catch-up speeding. But I presume professional drivers do encounter traffic delays reasonably regularly, would they not? Forgive me, Greg, if this seems a little cynical this morning. Just 48 people were brought to court for drug driving offences. Perhaps we should check the boot of the patrol cars to see if any checks are actually ongoing. All right, Kevin Fury, of course, works here at Highland Radio, regular commuter. Kevin, how are you getting on?
Good, Greg. Currently just going to pull in here at the moment. The traffic is built up basically from Lurgybrack School currently at the minute. Traffic is really, really heavy. So it is. Now, I set out my journey just before 8:30 this morning. So it's currently 23 minutes past 9. But I'm just going to get out here and just give you a quick indication of what we're seeing. Obviously, there is a lot of traffic. So
you'll still be fit to hear me.
Yeah, be careful. We just switched off the hands-free there. Okay, so you there are on the four lanes.
Currently on the four lanes here at the minute. I'm just outside Robert Key Power Equipment here. So that the traffic is basically built.
Give us a look. Give us a look there, so we can
see the whole way
it.
Back.
Yeah, give us a look so we can see it. The traffic there. Let us see the traffic. Give us a look there.
So yeah. There is the traffic currently at the minute. As you can see, heading. I'm just walking in the direction here of the Dry Arch. But the traffic is built the whole way up to Lurgybrack School at the minute. So just to turn the camera around for you quickly here, just to give you an indication. That's what's currently up ahead of me at the minute. So traffic very, very heavy. Now, when I came in here yesterday afternoon, obviously the traffic lights were just
someone
switched
seen
on
you there
at
chatting.
That point.
Someone giving you a toot? Go on ahead, yep.
Basically, when I was heading in at that point, I basically was heading, obviously, up to Highland Radio, was in the right-hand lane, but the traffic lights went red. Someone had just shot across, and then someone coming from the other direction had just moved out at that point. So basically, when the lights went green for me, I basically had nowhere to go. So obviously, it's a very dangerous situation. And even had a bus man pulled down. I can't say what he said on live radio, but he was a little bit on the frustrated side. But as you can see just there at the moment, I'll just show you again. Currently, traffic is just coming in.
And is that I'm not sure if you can hear me or if you can put me on speaker so I can communicate with you. Is that normal at the time that you travel in that the traffic would be out the four lanes on the approach to Letterkenny so far?
Not usually. Usually from the Clannery Hotel. Maybe the whole way in, you'd often find you'd have traffic, but never, you know, up Lurgy Brack. Maybe once in a blue moon, maybe after a bank holiday or something like that, you may experience that, but you kind of know that. You kind of would leave extra time in the morning. But I obviously left extra time this morning because I was unsure what I was actually going to face coming in this morning. But likewise, I've seen people comment on your social media posts last night, and even people... before I set out my journey as well this morning, people stuff up on Facebook about the traffic. And I know people that were
Can I look at the traffic? It's great to see you, yep. Kevin, but I see you every day. I just want to look at the traffic whilst you're talking. Go ahead, yep.
So I'm just currently here. If you're just wondering where I am, just currently there here at Robert Quay. So this is, obviously we're getting a few honks from a few people.
Good to see the Highland Radio listeners are out in force. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, we've got plenty of listeners here this morning. But yeah, that is, I know you mightn't fit to see it on my phone, but obviously as I walk towards...
You're pointing at the fence, you see.
Pardon?
You're pointing your phone at the fence.
Oh, sorry.
That's better, yes.
I'm holding this in my hand. I have a gimbal and everything. My bag had me in time to get it out, to get it ready. Right. But there you can see, obviously, the Clannery Hotel. And there you can see the traffic.
And the right-hand lane, the right-hand lane coming into Letterkenny seemed to move a bit more smoothly than the left-hand lane, of course. Well, Kevin, listen, maybe you might hop in the car and pick one of the other routes into Letterkenny and jump out with your gimbal, and some way you can hear me correctly, and we'll get an update as to the access from other roads. As I say, it's early days yet. The lights are on for the first morning. They have to be calibrated and all that kind of stuff. But of course, there are thousands of people affected by this, so it would be silly for us not to talk about it. But listen, maybe you might go to another of the roads accessing onto that Polestar, and we'll chat to you again in a wee bit, if that's all right.
Yep, that's perfect.
All right, thanks very much, Kevin. Really do appreciate it. That's Kevin Fury, who is looking at the traffic for us at the moment. Do I have Anthea back? Are you there? No, we don't have... Well, she's excellent, because as I say... to Caroline and Anthea and to listeners, it's just really important, and it's so important to her and those around her that that we can hear exactly what she's saying. Just at Creche over Leck, traffic back the whole way going into Old Town. It's a disaster. Is that normal, though? I need comparisons as to the way it would be for you. And also, maybe you got to work, school or creche a little bit quicker this morning than you ordinarily would at the same time. Let us know. Another caller says it's a wee bit built up on the Mount Errigal, but it flew through. The problem yesterday seemed to me all at Remelton Road and up by the sorting office. OK, good news. Greg, traffic to the top of Lurgy Brack. Get the council on now. Coming down from a drop-off at Lurgy Brack, absolute mayhem. Traffic backed up at Tinney's Roundabout. Another traffic madness this morning, stuck at Leck Graveyard the last 10 minutes and haven't moved. Traffic nearly back as far as Tinney's Toys. Was to be at work at 9, still in the traffic. OK, keep them coming, those updates as to... And it's really interesting if you sort of give us a comparison... give us a comparison as to what you normally experience as to what you're experiencing now. All right, a caller says stuck in this now 15 minutes. It's backed up to Letterkenny Ready Mix. Another Greg Ashlawn is being used as a shortcut now for traffic going to the college. So far, we've counted 47 cars in the last 18 minutes. Some have been told to slow down. Greg, was in Letterkenny yesterday evening a total disaster. They have the town destroyed with traffic lights and so hard to see now, trying to get into the dry art shop coming in from the carriageway with the lights there and that big block of concrete in the middle of the road. Old town Lismonahan Lech is backed up now to another traffic also at past Tinney's on the Lech Road. Crazy, says another listener. Keep them coming into us. Okay. Now, there are calls for early intervention services for non-resident fathers. Damien Pilo is CEO of Truro and he joins us now. Good morning to you. Thanks for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having us.
We just heard the issue raised, was it this week or the end of last week, as it relates, and it's a separate issue, but I'm just wondering, is there a connection to it, as it relates to the legislation to have the right of fathers to have their name included on birth certs. Is that something your organisation welcomes, that the government has committed to correct the errors in the legislation to allow that to become law in most cases?
Absolutely. This is one of Truro's areas that we have really advocated for over the last number of years, that children have a right to their identity, and part of that is who they come from. And whether they or not they have a relationship with that parent, and usually it's the dad, they have a right to know who that person is and their extended family. And so we know that now from issues around adoption. We know how important identity is for children who are adopted. And it's equally as important for children to know who their father is. And so the Civil Registration Act that came out of the Children and Family Relationships Act, that it was recommended in the Children and Family Relations Act that the father's birth cert, the father's name would be mandatory on the birth certs. That has taken a long time to get over, to get to be put in place. And part of the difficulty was, we were told initially, was training for the registrars to be able to ask that question in an appropriate way that wouldn't traumatized the mother, and rightly so. But now we've been told that the legislation itself was clumsily written and has to go back to the Oireachtas. But we've been told that over 2 years ago that was going to be put into the next window of opportunity for legislative reform, and we're still waiting. So It's something that we're keeping our eye on. We've been told as of recently that it's still a priority for the government, but we're waiting because we think it's a really important one for all families and children.
And look, I know these situations can be distressing, and there can be lots of different extenuating circumstances, but anyone that goes to the GP in their 30s, 40s or 50s, one of the first questions you're asked is, what's your medical history? So for that reason alone, I think it's really important, if we care for children, to make sure they have that information as they mature and get older. And I know there's all the stuff that goes on, but it's so critical to treatment and care and everything else, and that's just one element of why it's important. The focus, though, of our interview is the report commissioned by Truro. It focuses on the experience of non-resident fathers. So are these fathers with that have no interaction with their children, that are struggling to get interaction with the children, that have court mandated access to their children? Who was surveyed?
Well, it was primarily a cohort of those fathers. It was really aimed at fathers who wish to have a meaningful relationship with their child. And we thought about it from a child's perspective, and that's why the title is from children who wish to have meaningful relations with their non-resident father, because we wanted to be a child-focused. And Truro always has a belief that where possible to do so, children should have and develop meaningful relationships with both of their parents. And so some separated parents get on really well and they arrange that, no problem. But a lot of the callers to Truro's National Information Service would be from both mothers and fathers, whereby there's a lot of conflict between the parents in relation to rearing their children. And we wanted to have a deeper dive and look into what are some of the issues that are preventing children from developing and maintaining relationships with their non-resident fathers. So these are fathers who may have had court access, who may have had an arrangement with the mother, or who may know that they are father, but don't know quite well, how do I go about beginning to develop a relationship with my child?
Right. So what are the main findings from your perspective, or recommendations coming from those findings, perhaps?
Yeah, well, what was really interesting was the collaborative piece of work that a number of us, Truro invited a number of organizations together, that we knew that we respected each other's work, but may not have always been on the same page when it came to some issues in relation to the legal status of the non-marital family. And so we looked at how we wanted to dive into this piece of research and look at it in relation to what impacts children's development of a relation with their father. And so what some of the big recommendations that came out of it were things that we kind of knew already, but really good to get the data behind it, that parents often had a very negative experience of the court service. That's not unexpected, but it was such a level that from both sets of parents, and particularly fathers, felt that the court services came from a perspective that they were always treated as secondary parents, that they weren't given equal status in their parenthood.
And do you know what that means as well? Sorry for interrupting, Damien. What that means is that it could create an environment or a situation where a father might actually have to speak negatively of the mother in order to gain access, even if they don't want to necessarily. Exactly. Because if it is so heavily weighed to mothers, and one can understand what that might be, you might find yourself instantly having to actually chop them down somewhat to try and level the playing field. And a system that's set up that might encourage that is a poorer system.
Yeah, well, courts are by their very nature adversarial, and that's not to say that everybody hasn't got a right to access the courts for justice and equality, but courts by their nature are adversarial. And you're absolutely right on both sides of that. Mums talk down dads talk down mothers, and it gets very, very messy. And often what the research also showed, even though we have legislation, and since the referendum about children, the voice of the child is seldom heard in the court. And that's something that really has to change. And so one of the big findings was that there needs to be early intervention support for families where parents don't live together, and the promotion of what we call shared parenting or co-parenting. And one of the contributors to the research and who spoke at the launch was a father from a rural area who basically said he had no notion, no concept of co-parenting. That all he was ever told was, you have to go to court, you have to get your rights, you have to get this, you have to get that. Mm-hmm. And it just led to constant conflict with the other parent. And what he would have loved was somebody to come at their very earliest stage and say, co-parenting works. Mm-hmm. Shared parenting works. Here's what you need to do. Here are the sports that you need to do. Here's how you de-escalate conflict.
But Damien, pardon my ignorance, right? Say in the absence of, say, domestic abuse or addiction or what have you, right? So you have two people. Is there not a sort of a framework that has been established that, you know, you see if it fits a situation? In other words, do you know what I mean? People fall out. People move on. There's all those insecurities, all that kind of stuff, right? But would it not be good if we had a point, and maybe it's there, again, pardon my ignorance statement, whereby when there aren't any circumstances, challenging behaviours, a deficit, that there is a framework that is accepted that is best for the partners and the children, or the former partners and children, and then that's the starting point.
You're absolutely right. And I'm so glad you put the caveat in, because in so many cases, there isn't that issue of domestic violence, and you have just two people who either never were together or were together and fell out, and they don't trust each other, or they're not sure about each other, and they have gone down a route of conflict, even though they may try not to, and they both say they want each other in their child's life. While there are some great examples of a framework of some good supports in place, they're not, you know, not national. They're not available all over the country, and they're not well funded, so they're not well resourced. And the notion, and even that concept of shared parenting, isn't promoted. And so you don't have what people, if you Google it and you go on, you know, mother's rights, and it can be very antagonistic language used and very inflammatory language, or it brings you down to the legal route, which is about you need to get this. And people do need to have their rights, you know, enshrined.
And I think we have to factor in and look at this in the wider picture as well, in terms of people's mental health.
Yes.
And the impacts that these have, because you can't, say, for instance, in a court order situation, you can't take that in isolation. It also has to be factored in as to what the impact is on the individual. Of course, it's all about the child, but surely, and it can be for a man or a woman, that the court system has to have a wider responsibility and say, okay, you know, and also we need a system that does as best as possible to remove any biases that a person making a decision might have, an ingrained bias. We don't know the background. We don't know their relationship status. We don't know if they've been through a breakup. I'm not questioning the judiciary, don't get me wrong, but we need a system that removes any, as much as is possible, removes any of those potential biases.
Absolutely. And what does happen now in many, many places is that as soon as you go into the courts, you're actually redirected towards mediation, which is a better system, which is a better way of working. But what often happens with mediation is that you get a number of sessions and you're quickly trying to reach a deal and negotiate a deal. What's wonderful about that is that parents, in theory, maintain the decision making. They don't ask a third party like a judge to decide on their behalf how it goes. That never works really. And it only works where people just cannot communicate with each other. But where the mediation works well is that people come to an agreement. The problem is implementation of that agreement. Dad doesn't show up on the time he's supposed to. Mum gets annoyed. Dad's maintenance mightn't be coming in. Mum gets annoyed. Mm. They withhold the child. And what we're really talking about is if you come from the notion that it is in the best interest of the child to have both parents actively involved in a meaningful way in their child's life, and you keep that at the center of everything you do, you know, parents aren't, we think we're great at this. We think that we do that instinctively. But actually, we talk about the courts not listening to the child. We need to hear the child's voice. We need to understand that. And we need to be equipped to learn how to do that more effectively and better so that we put the child's voice at the center. And when you do that, some of the issues and arguments don't seem as big a deal anymore. And some of the things that you're holding up over don't seem to be a big deal. And what you really need is a flexible working relationship so that Dad can actually be a helping hand in the care and raising of the child. That dad is really part, even if he has no relationship with the mother, the relationship is that they have a child together and that they need to find a way to communicate. And how did he get on today? What was it like? How was he upset? He was upset before in school today. So you might want to watch out for that when he's coming to you tonight, you know. So they're
the
talking about
the complexity of
things.
This, though, is emotion. You know, yes, emotion, and again, a framework has to be in place to mitigate that as much as is possible. It can't be beyond us. What do you hope? What are you going to do with this report? Who is this furnished to now? You know, what ministry has any responsibility? Is there any appetite for reform?
Oh, there is. I mean, we're in the process there's two major departments: Department of Justice and the Department of that long name Department of Children that has Children Equality, Youth and Integration, and all of those. That's probably the primary department. But there's law reform at the moment. There's continuous efforts to try and change the law. So there's new ways of working in the courts. There's new investment in mediation, and what we're saying that mediation needs to go beyond the current structure of mediation into some new pilots and collaboration with the community sector around pre-mediation and post-mediation and implementation. So we need to be pushing for a promotion of shared parenting, that framework you talk about is actually in people's mind, that when they have a child and are not with the mother, they're not immediately thinking, go to court. They're immediately thinking, how shared parenting, that sounds like a great option. How do I become a better shared parent? How do I become a better parent? How do I become a better parent that's sharing the parenting of the child when I'm not living with the mother? And then there's a whole set of other structures that need to be put in place to allow that to happen. And so for dads at the moment, you know, if you're a single dad and you're co-parenting your child and the mother has more than 50% of care of that child as the primary carer, your ability to get accommodation that meets the needs of your family is much more difficult because you're seen to be a single dad. And while you can go and look for an application for higher subsidies to go for, you know, a two-bedroom apartment instead of a one, very often what we're finding is young dads, if they have a place at all, it's not appropriate to bring children. It's usually in a shared home, in a shared room with lots of other people. And mums are rightly saying, look, I don't know it's safe to bring the child on an overnight over there or even over there. So dads don't have safe places to engage with their children in meaningful ways. So it's often that you know that they have a couple of hours access during the course of the week or the weekends. And they're either out in the parks or walking around shopping centres if the weather's not good. And they don't have homes that they can bring that child into, that child can start.
And then, of course, too, that doesn't work because when the children have a great time and they go home to the home and the confines of that, and the parent that has them around the park and the shopping centres seems like the best parent in the world. And so in a way, it's no harm sort of. And I think that's why there is this proposal for child contact centres across the country, which will make a lot of sense. OK, Damien, thanks for your time this morning. Interesting stuff. We'll see how things progress from here. That's Damien Pilo, CEO of Chirur. We're going back out onto the streets of Letterkenny with Kevin after these. Kevin, what's the weather like?
It's cold. I can imagine. It's okay. Lots of rain and everything here on the camera. So if I do look a bit smudged, that's what it is to start to rain here at the minute. But what I've done, obviously, I've come through the roundabout. I'm currently here at Rossview Business Park. But I'll just share my experience just coming through the traffic lights. So just as I approached the roundabout, the lights actually turned green. So it wasn't so bad. But obviously, when I got halfway around then, they did go red. And then when they went green again, the problem was the traffic coming from the roundabout heading up towards, as we call it, the Pennies roundabout then. That traffic was then built up. So basically when the lights turned green for us to come up this way, obviously we couldn't go. We basically couldn't go.
So you were green but blocked by traffic?
We were green but blocked by traffic. Okay. That's basically
so
what it
this
was.
Is the road now coming past the IT or the ATU towards the roundabout that you're on here now, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're opposite Lidl Aldi there.
I'll just turn the
there.
Camera around here so Lidl. You can see that's there is the roundabout there. Okay. I'm just here at Rossview Business Park, just opposite Lidl. Now, I did look across.
Well, there's not much traffic behind you there. So
no, there's actually not. You can see there at the minute, there's actually nothing. There's only literally two vehicles. That's all we have at the minute. And a couple of passengers waving to us there. And but no, there's no traffic. Also, too, coming from the direction of the Mount Derrigal, I mean, I think I only counted about 7 or 8 cars at one point. Now, there did a few more did come, but there's no build-up of traffic.
Right, walk down
in that
towards
direction.
The roundabout there and give us a look at the road with the Mount Terrigal there. Oh, yeah. How far away are, so are you? Miles away, are you?
Is what you're seeing at the minute now. I don't know if you can see up ahead. You can see a bin lorry there, but the traffic is built up the whole. Now, if you look in the direction, obviously, that I've just come there from the Dry Arch roundabout, traffic seems to be moving pretty okay in that direction. We can see vehicles at the Dunn stores coming from the direction of the new Dunn stores. We can see build-up of traffic there now. I said I didn't actually look over in that direction, so I'm not 100% sure what the traffic is.
So we must remember also, too, that we are now outside rush hour. It's 10 to 10, 8 minutes to 10, so we're not in rush hour any longer.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the things I did bear in mind this morning, that considering I was going to be that little bit earlier, you know, was it a case this morning that maybe I was just a bit earlier and it, you know, the traffic is usually this bad, but obviously I'd have been in numerous times, you know, been early, whatever, but it would have been, definitely would not have been as bad as that. So you can see this is currently the roundabout here, so traffic currently stopped there at the minute at these lights.
And that's letting traffic out, yeah, okay. I see. Still to be quite a bit of traffic on the four lanes there. And then at that rock, I don't know what those roads are called. I'm useless. I should be doing a different job. But the approach past the Mount Errigal to the roundabout seems to be moving all right there, is it?
Yeah, it's flowing quite normal. So it is actually at the moment. And as I said, bear in mind, this is about 15, 20 minutes ago. It was flowing quite normal as well. And obviously, I know there's vehicles there in the way at the moment, but just when these go past, just give you a quick glimpse.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, traffic doesn't seem to be too bad coming from the direction of the new Dunn's, obviously. So, clearly the problems, I don't know, maybe earlier on, maybe there's listeners out there, maybe they just have to text in and tell us what it was like a little bit earlier on coming from that direction. Maybe it was pretty bad, but it looks good. If you look actually currently,
yeah, things are moving quite well. There's no traffic on it. But as I say, yeah, there still seems to be quite a bit of traffic out the four lanes. So anyone on the four lanes,
yeah,
when it's safe to do so, let us know if things are moving in an inward fashion. All right, Kevin, listen, thanks for that. Thanks for the insight. I appreciate it. We all appreciate it.
No bother at all.
All right, take care of yourself. Jeanette's with us as well. Jeanette, what's your experience? Good morning to you.
Hello there. I left Bunkrana at 10 to 10 and I am up here for an appointment now at 10 to 11. The traffic coming in from Clanree to the Polestar roundabout was literally 4 minutes, and there's no traffic heading towards the New Link Road at all. It's moving very, very well.
Brilliant. So, in other words, you allowed yourself lots of time. You're ahead of schedule.
Yeah. I'm ahead of schedule. I normally take 45 minutes from Bunkrana doing it, and today I was literally only 5 minutes over, which was perfect.
Fantastic.
And I'm in plenty of time, so now the traffic's going well. It reminded me of heading in to the New Link Road and in Belfast. If you're in time or you're taking your time, everything's moving great.
Yes, exactly. It's so true. And if you're up against the clock, everything goes against you. But as I say, you know, we're not here to sort of say that this is a disaster. And I really appreciate, Jeanette, you sharing your positive experience, because it's really important that we get that balance struck. And things look like they're moving really quite well now, although, as I say, we are past rush hour. Okay, Jeanette, listen, thank you very much for that. You're happy with how things moved, and you're happy with how your journey from Bunkrana into Letterkenny went.
It definitely went very, you know what, I would actually go as far as to say it was maybe better today than it was some other days coming to this Polestar roundabout from the Dunn Store side. So now done very well.
Brilliant. Okay, that's great stuff. Jeanette, thank you.
Okay.
All right, take care of yourself. All right, bye-bye. So that's Jeanette's experience, which is a positive one, and they're very much welcomed as well, by the way. We're just trying to get a full sense of what's going on. Let's get to some more of your comments here. I live on the Leck Road in Letterkenny, and I left it late to go to work in the hope that the traffic would be clear. Normally it's clear by 9:15. This morning I'm still sitting in the street trying to get out. How are these lights making traffic easier, or is it the car drivers as usual jumping them, adding to the traffic jam? You wouldn't want to be jumping the traffics on the traffic lights in the Polestar. Dave, good morning to you. What's your experience?
Hi, Greg. Yeah, my wife was on it. They're not too bad at this time of the day, but I suppose you got to give it a chance to start bedding in. But in my own opinion there, like, you know, while the access is blocked off, there's no exits free from the roundabout at the busy times, at the best of times, you know. So while the exits are blocked getting off, I can't see how the roundabout would work, you know.
Yeah, because so you
people
kind
compare
of
it to the one in...
Go ahead, Dave, sorry. Yeah.
Sorry, no, people compare it to the round in Derry there by the bridge, by the Foyle Bridge. And the thing about that roundabout is that every exit is free when your green light comes on. You can get away, you know. Whereas Letterkenny is different there, you know.
Yeah, we heard from Kevin there that he was stopped on the roundabout on red, but the lights turned green, and because people were still stuck on the roundabout, not able to get off the exits, there was no advancement even on green. That really talks to what you're highlighting there.
Yeah, also I thought there, like, I mean, maybe a missed opportunity now, but the new road, which is a good road and all, but maybe three lanes coming in would have been a better idea.
Mm-hmm.
So that people could get down the Neil T. Blaney Road in a way where it's not blocked, you know.
I get you.
But as it is, you're sitting halfway up the Port Road and you can't get to the Blaney Road to get in.
Yeah, I understand. I understand exactly what you're saying. All right, Dave, listen, thanks very much for your insight. Let us know when you're on it at peak times. Cheers, Dave. Thanks very much indeed. Right, let's take a break for the news and obituary notices. Loads to come on the show. Keep your texts, calls and comments coming in.